Let's go. Here we go now. Hello, my name is Rebecca Tapp, and this is the DNA of Purpose podcast, where we explore purpose as a part of who we already are. We showcase awe inspiring stories of the most purpose-driven people on the planet with the intention of giving you the tools to step into the potential of who you were always born to be. After all, it's in your DNA. Coel Simpson, welcome to the DNA of Purpose podcast. As I was just saying before the episode, I am absolutely buzzing to be speaking with you today. So thank you for joining us.
You are so very welcome. It's an honor and really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
So I want to say that the reason that I'm so excited to have this conversation is because obviously, just like you, I grew up spending pretty much the first 18 years of my life literally surrounded by horses. So before we get into today's conversation, I'm wondering if you would mind taking a moment to introduce yourself to our listeners and really helping them to understand how you've brought your life, your purpose to life through the work that you do.
Yes, thank you. It's been quite an amazing journey. And sometimes, as it is for most of us, we look back on hindsight and it's like, wow, I can't believe all those things really happened, you know? But for me personally, I grew up in an environment with a lot of trauma. And I was very challenged in my relationships with people. And by the same token, I came into my sort of life experience as a young child who was very curious and very outgoing and affectionate and a very sort of loving kid. And I remember myself to be a kid who was pretty obsessed with nature, always wanting to be outside, you know, walking around, looking for frogs and putting them in little buckets in the evening and having conversations with them and then trying to figure out, you know, where I found them and how to get them back to their homes. So definitely one of those kind of kids. And for me, I was very blessed to be able to maintain my relationship with nature, maintain my relationship and connection to animals. And when I was around 9-10 years old, I ended up in an environment where my mother had gotten engaged to someone who owned a very large sod farm. And we had all of these horses that, you know, were just hanging out in the fields, being horses together. And I, right from the start, thought, okay, this isn't going to be so bad. You know, I can handle doing new schools. I can handle all the changes because I have these amazing friends that I'm going to make my new besties, so to speak. And I was in for a pretty rude awakening at the start. I thought it would be like the movies. I thought, you know, you would feed them an apple or a carrot or a peppermint or something, and then they would follow you around like a puppy dog and everything would be amazing. And I was, you know, kind of taken aback to discover like, oh, it's not quite like that. It doesn't quite work like that. And it set me on a course for a just exquisite journey of learning. You know, while my relationships with people were beginning to kind of crumble and my sense of being able to trust in the people around me, being able to trust in the environment around me, as that started to kind of dissolve, I had this just beautiful opportunity to start to understand what were these animals trying to show me about another way to live. And it was, you know, when you go through a lot of challenging and traumatic experiences, for some of us, we definitely can reach a place where it can get to feeling pretty hopeless, a place of despair, a place of shutdown. And for me, I was definitely in that space. So being able to witness these animals who were so completely comfortable being themselves, and so direct and honest about giving me feedback about how they felt. In other words, whether they were willing to engage with me or not, it began to shape my understanding and my awareness in a whole new way. And, you know, that kind of set me on a trajectory for the work that I do now.
And what is the work that you do now? For those of you who haven't heard of the amazing world of Coelle Simpson, in a bit of a snapshot, what do you do?
Thank you. I founded something called Equus Coaching as a result of all of this, you know, incredible learning starting from my youth and on into my 20s. I had some wonderful teachers and mentors along the way, but the most valuable teachers and the most generous teachers I ever experienced were the animals themselves, most especially horses. And when I was in my late teens, I really began to feel like it was possible to shift this sort of pattern of shutdown and distrust and disconnection from people. I began to see a lot more of what the animals were showing me about a different way of operating with one another and how we actually, you know, life is always going to throw a tremendous number of challenges along with these beautiful moments of connection and awe. But we're more capable of meeting these challenges than we ever thought. And when I was in my late teens, I began to realize, okay, I think I'm understanding this roadmap. And I certainly don't have all the answers. And I, you know, I hope to remain a humble student for my entire life. But I saw that there was a way to start to restore healthy relationships with human beings. And that really set me on a course of wanting to share the experience with other people. So I began teaching, and very quickly that turned into teaching and facilitating retreat experiences, leadership experiences, sharing talks, sharing stories. And that just organically kind of blossomed to connecting with people all over the world and beginning to really talk about what is needed for us to start to restore healthy relationships with one another, embrace our uniqueness and our diversity, and really begin to form a healthy, safe, trusting relationships with each other.
Amazing. And over the course of today's podcast, I have a lot of questions so that we can really dive a little more deeply into the actual process of what you do. But before we go there, I kind of want to jump back before we go forward again. Now, you referenced earlier that you had experienced early childhood trauma. And I guess what I'm really interested to understand is whether you're able to share with me a little bit about those early experiences, but more specifically, how did the horses play such a significant role in your personal healing?
Thank you. You know, they were very good at helping me sort of recognize when I was really shut down. Or, you know, for example, I might go out and try to just forget about what I was feeling, the fear, the sadness, the confusion. And I would go and just want to distract myself by being in an amazing, you know, field and spending time braiding manes and, you know, playing with horses. Like most girls tend to kind of go through a horse crazy stage. And I definitely felt that. And so, you know, I would go out and I would try to connect, but because they weren't horses that were kept in a typical riding stable, or, you know, being handled in more of like the way that we might use them for sport. These were horses that, while they were ranch horses and they were certainly ridden a few times a year, they were mostly left to be herds of horses. You know, they were mostly left to just be themselves and do their thing with each other. And so when I would go to try to connect with them, often what would happen is that they would distance themselves from me. So I would try bribery. I would try, schmoozing them. I would try cornering them somewhere in this, you know, massive pasture and field. And none of it worked. They would just keep kindly and gently moving away from me. And it was pretty devastating. But I started to get curious about what was happening. Because there were days when I would show up and I would just feel, you know, for lack of better words, I would just feel like a hot mess. You know, I would just feel really lonely and frustrated and confused and a real sense of betrayal. And they would come over. And it wasn't always when I was feeling really down or negative or sad or something, but what started to happen was that there was a real distinction between the times that they were willing to connect with me and the times that they weren't. And at 10 years old, I certainly couldn't have described it to you in the way that I can now.
It wasn't like you were conscious of that happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I was starting to get the sense for a feeling. And I began to get really curious because my desire to connect was so strong. I started to get really curious about what is happening here. Why is it that sometimes I come in and I can spend hours just, you know, playing amongst the herd and hanging out with everybody, and it's just this most exquisite feeling. And then there are other days I show up and, you know, it's like I forgot to brush my teeth, or I didn't put, you know, deodorant on or something, like they're not willing to connect. and after a period of time, I started to realize, oh, they are showing me something about my presence. They're showing me something about the way I show up here. And when I began to watch the way that they interact with each other, the thing that really stood out to me was, they always express what they're actually feeling. They never hide their needs or their desires. They're not trying to bribe anyone into anything. You know, they were just completely themselves. And so that was a big aha moment for me. I realized, wow, okay, the more that I'm just willing to be exactly as I am, and feel just as I actually feel in this moment, the more bandwidth and space there is for us to connect in a really genuine way. So in essence, I was really getting some very potent feedback from them that helped me start to trust in the importance of being myself.
And I can't help but to reflect on, as you're speaking, the whole idea that in order to heal, we need to feel. And the ability for a horse, as you're saying, to say, hey, this is where I'm at. There might be, you know, in human terms, it might be uncomfortable. It might be raw. It might feel like, you know, I'm stepping outside of my comfort zone. But in order to actually process whatever this is, I need to feel it and be in it.
Exactly. We don't really live in a human culture where we embrace the intelligence of our emotions. We have a few emotions that have been sort of culturally accepted. It's a good thing to be happy, or, you know, to be playful, but we don't create a lot of space and appreciation and willingness to sit in tension, frustration, anger, sadness. There's a lot of beauty and a lot of power and intelligence behind our emotions. But we come from a cultural environment that kind of essentially delivers a message that that's not okay. It's not okay to feel those things. And if you do, it means there's something wrong. So being submerged in an environment in nature, if you're really noticing and listening, it's one of the first things that really pops out, which is it's vital. It's absolutely vital to be in touch with your emotions. It's one of the most intelligent things you can do that helps you create a safe environment for yourself and to stay in touch with your needs and your personal boundaries.
Coel, I have so many questions and I'm going to keep going because I'm sure we will dovetail into all of this magic as we traverse through the remainder of the conversation. I want to come back to, I guess, the trauma piece, in that trauma is not something that we generally choose to have in our lives, yet many of us have experienced some kind of event that has shaped us in some way. And I think in these moments, we have a choice. We can either stay in the trauma and stay in the pain, or we can choose to turn that pain into purpose. When you think about your decision to become a horse whisperer, and I know you don't generally use that term, but for want of a better word, was it a conscious leaning towards purpose as a way to transform your past? Or do you think your journey was just like fate? It was destiny in action.
It's a tough question because it's hard to reflect back and know, you know, what is destiny and what is fate and what is our organic learning? And maybe those things are always interwoven. But when it comes to trauma, the thing that I've learned throughout this entire journey is the vital importance for us to have a safe relationship. When they study childhood trauma, they now understand that one of the primary things for us to really be able to function, to be able to find some way to navigate forward, to have some level of resilience towards these very challenging experiences, is that we have at least one person or one relationship where we feel that there's a sense of care. We feel that there's some level of safety. We feel that there's some level of nurturing. So for most of us, because we have many, many generations of unresolved trauma, you know, everyone's doing the best they can. But unfortunately, we know that, you know, more than 70% of adults have experienced events of trauma. Large majority of that is childhood trauma. And so even with everyone doing the best they can, a lot of our coping strategies are not terribly productive. And we end up passing on these trauma cycles, right?
Totally. And I guess I just want to say at this point, it can be trauma with a big T or a little T. Everything's relative, right?
Exactly, yes. So we're not just talking about experiences of, you know, neglect or physical abuse or sexual abuse. It can also be experiences where you just don't feel safe enough to be yourself. So because we live in a culture that tends to be, in our human culture, so to speak, it tends to be really focused on perfectionism. Most of the time, most human beings, once they get through their really early childhood years and they start to become more socially aware, they begin to have this feeling of there's some way in which I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not deserving enough. I haven't, you know, I have to figure out how to get the right job or the right relationship or have the right skin color or whatever it is. So that in itself is something that's traumatic. It's just not something that we necessarily talk about as one of the big T traumas, but it still has a very profound effect on our psyches and on our nervous systems.
So, Coel, as this podcast is all about the DNA of purpose, one of the things we know about DNA is that it evolves as a result of the environment. So when you look back over your journey, were there any significant turning points or even people, mentors that helped you crystallize your purpose, not only as a horse whisperer, but as a translator of the equus language with a focus on helping people to heal or to step into a higher potential?
Sure. So a little bit dovetailing to your previous question, which is when I kind of started to recognize the what these animals were showing me and that capacity for us to really restore our ability for safe, healthy, intimate connections with one another. I definitely, as a result of those safe relationships through the animals, for me, it was like, oh, okay, this is possible. We can do this. And I felt a real surge of a sense of purpose, recognizing that we actually are highly resilient beings and we really can restore healthy relationships with one another. So that fueled me with an immense sense of purpose because, I guess I needed to believe that the world could be based on a foundation of love. I needed to believe that we really did have the ability to create a different life for ourselves, despite all of the traumatic events that we go through. So throughout the journey, I knew from in my early 20s that the work that I'm doing now, I just was, it was one of those strange things where I just felt so compelled that I knew that this would be the trajectory I would go on. There had been all of these wonderful teachers that have come across my path along the way. And I'm immensely grateful for both the teachers that provided challenges, the teachers that I, and mentors that I really looked up to, and, those moments of recognizing, wow, that is definitely something I don't want to do, So really appreciative of all of those experiences. But I would say that probably the most, the biggest, element that has shaped that sense of purpose for how to move forward has been the clients themselves. So as
I
I've
watched a few of your client videos on your website. I have to say they have all been as equally moved by you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's been such a beautiful full circle experience to restore that sense of safety and well-being within myself, and to really be able to show up to listen and understand and witness each other's experiences. In the very beginning, when I first started to share this work in this kind of format, which was in 2006, I wanted clients to get everything. I wanted them to have the sun, the moon, and the stars, and understand the full scope of what was happening in their sessions. And it was like they were being hit with Niagara Falls. And I had to learn, wait a minute, slow down. Really, yes, all these things can be shared and all these insights can be had, and this beautiful growth and transformation, we're all capable of it. But let's slow down and really be attentive and be in tune with exactly where this particular individual is at and the pacing that they need to move at to feel that sense of safety and presence. So I am so grateful to every client and every individual who was willing to go on an adventure and explore an experience together, because they have continued to shape my understanding of how to show up better, how to listen better, how to form a more productive therapeutic environment that allows this kind of transformation to take place.
And Koel, I know one of your greatest teachers was a horse called Maximus. And I'd love to hear the story of Maximus before we start to talk about how you work with humans and horses. Are you able to share with me how Maximus touched your life and your heart?
Oh, thank you. Oh, there have been so many exquisite horses that have really shaped my understanding. Maximus was definitely one of them. he was a horse that that I came across while I was spending, at that time, I was doing a lot more of kind of equine training and helping really horses that had been through a lot of trauma and trouble themselves. From the time I was a teenager into my early 20s, that was a fair amount of my work. I was deeply, well, let's just say I was somewhat obsessed over trying to understand how we actually integrate experiences of trauma in a productive way, and seeing how animals, and in this case, horses, were able to really do that. So I was working with Maximus, and as I came to understand his story, he had been pretty severely abused. He had unfortunately been roped out in a field and had his feet roped together. He had been driven, dallied off onto a truck and had been driven across fields, just being dragged by his feet. He had been whipped. He had been brutally, it was just young college age boys that thought it was a funny thing to do to terrorize an animal. You know, that was kind of the mentality of things that were modeled for them. They didn't understand what they were doing. They didn't know any better. And unfortunately, all that youth and testosterone and too much drinking was the result of some pretty horrendous behavior. Mm. So when I first started to work with Maximus, someone had brought him to me and started, you know, to kind of give me the story. And I had just was kind of holding him in a lead rope that I was sort of not had a good handle on, had just brushed the side of his leg, and he absolutely exploded. You know, he kicked out and he missed my head by inches. And I was like, well, okay.
Let's not do that again.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, I understand the level of fear and reactivity that we're dealing with here. When I began to work with him, it was a challenging experience because at that time I had worked with quite a few horses. I'd worked with a lot of very troubled horses, and I went seeking them out everywhere I could find them. And he was tough, just to put it politely. You know, he was very challenging. A lot of the things that I explored and tried, he just continued to stay disconnected, worried, aloof, distant. And there was one evening where I was just really pondering, what else can I try? What else can I do? And I fell asleep that night, and he kind of showed up in a dream, and he reminded me, you know, if you want to be able to help me, you first have to help yourself. You know, he essentially was letting me know, you keep trying to find a way to connect with me. But at the time, I just kept thinking, what am I doing wrong? What's wrong? What am I, you know, I kept being in this loop of putting more pressure on myself and sort of criticizing myself for not being able to figure it out. And so the next day I showed up to our session together, and I decided to just let all those agendas and objectives go and to really be in the place of, you know what, I absolutely have no idea what you need, and I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm going to leave my entire past outside of our session and just be here with you. And it was a really important, powerful moment. And as we started to sort of, in a way, dance together in this nonverbal language of just exchanges and movement together and gentle requests from each other and really listening to what the other was asking for and needing, without any objective at all, he, for the first time after so many attempts, really made a point to reach out and connect. He walked over, he would put his head up against my back or nuzzle his, you know, muzzle next to my arm, or sometimes explore my face a little bit, and just really showing me that he had a willingness to connect. And at the end of the session, we were kind of, I was like, okay, I think this is good. I feel like this is a good place for us to stop. He went into the middle of the pen and he laid down. And at first I thought, oh, wow, that's amazing. Mm. That's the most vulnerable position you could be in. And especially after everything you've been through, having your flight taken away from you and being tied up by your legs and dragged across, you know, pretty horrendous ground. That was substantial for him to lay down like that. And then he continued to lay there. And he continued to lay there. And for a moment, I had a panic. I was like, oh my goodness, did we do something that was too strenuous? Is he maybe having, you know, a colic issue? Is there some kind of health problem? You know, I started to feel that moment of doubt. And he picked his head up off the sand and he looked over at me very deliberately. And I just was awash with this feeling and this internal voice that said, well, come on already. Come over here. You know, come join me. And I thought, okay, I really don't want to undo the trust that we've just built. But the whole message that you've been giving me is to leave those stories behind. You know, just be fully present to how this moment feels. So I very gently walked over, knelt down beside him, and we just hung out together, laying there, resting and sleeping. And he just let out this huge sigh. And I was overwhelmed with emotion of recognizing that importance of really just showing up for connection and nothing more. And that space of deep listening is where the trust happens.
Mm. And, you know, over the next few questions, I'm going to unpack the how of how you go about building that trust and what we learn in terms of our own growth as human beings. But before doing so, there's two things that really stand out for me listening to you talk about Maximus. Firstly, the fact that he came to you in a dream, but even how you speak about him, it's like you have this really deep, intuitive and spiritual, like soul connection with the horses. Do you believe that the horses do communicate at that level, that there is that spiritual aspect to the work that you do that enables you to, I guess, connect in that sort of soulful way?
I do. Yeah. I think what I call it is a language of feeling.
Mm.
And the more that I show up to be a humble student of nature, the more that I understand that this is a universal language. This is something that we are all doing and we are all exchanging all of the time. How we interpret it, how we choose to make sense of it, what we call it, that is something to be discussed, and, you know, and everybody has a different way of trying to hold it and explain it. I don't in any way think that I am special. There is nothing, you know, it is rather a willingness to be really attentive to the feeling state of what's happening. Mm. Now, for me, part of that comes as the result of having lost my hearing as a very young child. So when I was 2 years old, I lost the majority of my hearing.
This
set me on a course to really listening non-verbally and listening to the feeling. You know, if you walk into a room and there are a handful of your friends in there, and you walk in and you have headsets on or something and you can't hear what's being said, and you walk back out, and I say to you, what was your sense of what was happening in that room? You can give me a lot of beautiful, exquisite information without even trying, because our bodies absorb the feeling state and all the subtle nonverbal gestures of what's happening. We all do that exquisitely.
Mm. It's that same sense if someone's had an argument and you go into a room,
right.
you get that kind of, oh, something's happened here.
Exactly, yeah. Right? And with the tension or the argument, we are taught not to talk about it, you know, not to bring it up. Don't say anything. Don't put anybody on the spot. And this is where we start to, especially when we're kids, we start to fragment from our intuition. you know, when parents have an argument or something, there's some kind of tension in the family or someone's dealing with a significant challenge, but nobody talks about it. And you begin to disconnect from what you know, because we don't necessarily know how to bring it out into the open and have important conversations.
Doesn't fit into the status quo. So let's just put that over there because that's a bit too hard to look at.
Right.
And what I find so fascinating about this, and it's a really beautiful, I guess, gateway into the conversation, is that we can really begin to understand how animals do communicate, given they don't have language or rules or status quo, that in many ways their only way to communicate with us is through this beautiful intuitive intelligence. And what I'm hearing from you is that because of your experience, and maybe that was influenced by losing the vast majority of your hearing and things like that, but you were able to really tap into that and open to that, which has given you the gateway to communicate more deeply with the animals, especially the horses. But I imagine other animals too, really.
Yes. And I do with other animals all the time. One of my favorite things to do is to take people into the bushveld and spend times with wild herds of elephants.
Oh, wow.
But to go back to what you were saying, for example, my perspective of one of the things that Maximus was trying to show me was, you know, when I came in with these ideas that it was my role to try to help him and my role to try to figure things out and figure out what he needed. Essentially, my ego was getting in the way. You know, my ideas of what I thought should happen or what I thought was going to somehow fix the problem was really getting in the way. Mm-hmm. And what he was essentially reflecting to me and showing me in some of these messages is you have to go back to being in touch with what you feel. I had to go back to that place of vulnerability inside myself, of not knowing anything, of not having the answers, of just feeling my deepest heart's desire to connect with him. And in that place of feeling, now my mind is not in the way. My objectives and my ideas or my agenda or the ticking time clock or whatever it is have all been put aside. And in that place where I can just be really deeply present to what I feel in my body and what I feel emotionally, everything begins to move like water. It's very fluid. In that place, I'm now open to feeling Maximus, right? And so his feeling can kind of move into me. My feeling can kind of move into him. It's and fluid. We start to have this beautiful relationship of nonverbal conversation. It's an exchange of feeling states.
What I love about the metaphor of water is in terms of, I guess, having the moments where we're able to self-locate with regards to what we are feeling, that idea that water can flow, it can gush, it can freeze, it can boil over. And basically what I'm hearing from you now is if we can find that flow state, that's when we can begin to tap into that open dialogue, not only between human and horse, but between human and human.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. When we start to form a healthy relationship with our emotions, we don't clamp down and shy away from some and value others. We start to hopefully develop a relationship of curiosity and deep listening, deep listening to what's moving inside of ourselves. And as a result of that kind of movement, what might we actually be needing in this moment? You know, maybe we need to make a request to someone for more time or space, or, you know, maybe we need to let someone know how we actually feel or that we really care or that we need more time for connection with them. So when we're willing to listen and be open to the full scope of our emotions and embrace them, we start to take different action steps.
So, Coel, I want to, I guess, dive into understanding in a more pragmatic way how you work between you know, your clients and how they relate to the horses and what actually happens in terms of the process. And I think the best starting point for that is firstly for us to understand the herd dynamics and the role of the matriarch mare, because I've heard you reference the matriarch a few times in doing my research prior to the podcast. And I think that's probably helpful for people to understand to then go to the next level of the work that you do. So if you could share some wisdom on the matriarch for me.
Sure,
she sounds like the wise mare. I'm like, I want to be a matriarch mare.
Oh, goodness. You know, a couple of decades ago, even when we look at animals, we looked at nature, and particularly, you know, we looked at herds of horses or any herbivore for that matter. We often translate it through the constructs and the lens of what we know. And so we interpret things based on our ideas of what we already know. We very rarely see just the simplicity and the scope of what's actually happening. So I used to think that it was all about, you're supposed to show up to be this perfect, amazing, strong, never show signs of weakness, have all the answers, fearless, incredible leader. And the more that I spent time witnessing from the animals themselves, I realized, oh, it's not like that. Yes, when you have herds, when you have animals that form herds together, you have this beautiful, intricate family. And within the family, everybody has their personalities and their characteristics, and everybody has the roles that they naturally step into that fit who they are when they're just being themselves and the way that they serve that greater collective. Now, you will typically have a female that tends to be that sort of wise elder energy, so to speak. Mm. It doesn't mean that she's literally the oldest animal in the group. It just means that she tends to be the most calm. She tends to be the most aware, like very, very attentive to what's happening in the environment and what's going on around her. And what I really noticed was that she tends to be the one who sets the most clear boundaries on her space, on her resources, how much energy she has to give, and what she's interested in engaging with and connecting with or not. As a result of that kind of clarity, and connection to those personal needs and those boundaries, she has an enormous level of presence and love to offer. And so there's something about that combination of calmness and awareness and like crystal clear boundaries that helps the entire herd feel a deep sense of consistent safety. Now, it doesn't mean that she's the one who calls all the shots. Mm. And it doesn't mean that she has all the answers or that she dictates everything that happens. We used to look at herd behavior and we used to translate it that way. And it just isn't true. It is a living, organic, diverse expression of uniqueness and reciprocity, you know, relationships of working together. But within that, having someone that you feel that sense of calmness with, and you feel that sense of clarity of boundaries, most groups will organize behind that. We'll organize behind that because it helps us navigate what direction to go in next.
So then would I be correct in saying if I'm a leader and I come to your farm and we go out into the round yard and we're working with a horse, that the intention is really for that leader to work towards establishing the same mindset as the matriarch mare?
So great question. When someone comes for a session, you know, whether it's someone working through a personal relationship challenge or it's someone who's a, you know, a CEO of an organization, in either case, whatever their background is or whatever their intention or desire is, the work really centers around peeling back the layers and the stories that we have adopted to cope with our current environments that actually prevent us from our own essential wisdom. So, you know, what I mean by that, for example, a woman comes to a session, she's the CEO of a large organization. She's very frustrated that she can't, you know, feel a sense of connection to her team. She keeps trying harder and harder and harder to present in a certain way to prove herself as worthy. And what ends up happening is that in these interactions, in this case with a horse, the horse begins to reflect back to her the way that she shows up when she starts to engage in this idea that she's somehow not enough exactly the way that she is, or that it's not okay to show signs of weakness. And in those kinds of presentations, what happens is most often, not always, but most often, is that the horse will make a very deliberate choice to disconnect and move away. And in this case, this specific example I'm giving you, this client was like, you see, I'm doing everything I can do. And they don't trust me. I don't understand. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, what happens if you stop trying? You know, what happens if you let go of the idea that there's something more you need to do and you allow yourself to be in this place of not knowing? And being more authentic with how you actually feel and just actually showing this, in this case, the horse or your colleague, what's really on your heart? What's really, you know, your ultimate desire, intention, and how can you guys get there together? Not about you being this, you know, perfect person. And each and every time when we drop into a more authentic and vulnerable place inside ourselves, the feedback right away is, oh, there you are. Now I feel you. Now I see you. Now I feel safe to connect with you because you're being wholeheartedly yourself.
Yeah. So if we can just for a minute go back to the round yard and say you've had a moment with the client that you're working with, and they have realized that, in fact, that horse is reading that person's energy and as a result have maybe, as you just said, decided to disconnect or move away or whatever it might be with regards to how the horse is responding to that person. The client has that light bulb moment where they go, ah, okay, cool, I get it. The horse is responding to what I'm projecting out into the world. How do you then work with them to be able to help them to, I guess, align their thoughts and their emotions so that the emotion translates in the body and the horse responds differently?
Yeah, it's a great question. So for every person, it's a little bit different. You know, it's not some kind of cookie cutter process because we all have different needs. And we have, when you kind of explore deep enough, we do have some common universal fears. Taking a look at what some of those are, some of the experiences that individuals have had where they've felt a sense of betrayal, or they have felt a loss of trust in themselves or trust in other people, where they have received messages about an immense sense of expectation of what they're supposed to do in order to be successful, what they're supposed to do in order to survive or to be recognized in a positive way. So my role as a facilitator, or, you know, when I'm training others to learn how to facilitate this work, it's to understand what are some of those fears, what are some of those experiences that have happened. We've all had them. But now begin to just be curious about them and start to slowly work our way through some of those pieces where instead of really being in the here and now and embracing that vulnerable, wise expression of yourself, we're most often living in the past. We're most often living from a place of trying to compensate over something that's happened previously. So it's asking the right kinds of questions to find out what some of those events might be and where some of those fears reside. And when someone has a chance to really look at how that story was built and begin to dissolve it a little bit, the thing that's so exquisite about doing this kind of work in nature is that you get immediate feedback from the animals. Mm. So you get the chance to kind of show up differently and see what the response is from an animal that is not trained to do anything or respond to you in a particular way.
It's just purely reading your energy, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So we have a sort of a powerful opportunity to realize that, oh, this is happening in my relationships with people. Like when I make a shift in how I treat myself and how I'm feeling about myself, and I'm able to work through some of these fears that have me holding back, it changes the way that people interact with me. You know, I had a woman I'm thinking of who came for a session, and she was really frustrated because, again, she just couldn't get a sense of connection to her team. And she was trying to communicate with the horse that she was paired up with. And this horse was just not having it. You know, he was pretty revved up and racing around the pen. And I checked in with her and I said, "How's it going?" She said, "It is not good." I said, "Okay, that's okay. Tell me more." She said, "Well, I just want this horse to be calm. I just want this horse to slow down and be calm. Why won't it be calm?" I said, "Okay, let me just, if it's okay, let me see if I can help." So I came in with her and I just kind of gently offered my arm. And I said, "Listen, I want you to just experience something." And I began to slow down my breathing. And I began to just walk in a really relaxed manner. I let go of the outcome of whatever this horse was doing, which was not within our control. And I just began to say to her, "Just notice how it feels to be here with me and be, you know, for us to have our arms linked together. Just notice how it feels to just breathe a little bit more slowly. Just notice how it feels to take a break from trying to make that horse do anything." And what happened is she began to feel that sense of relaxation, right? Mm-hmm. And I said to her, "You know, with your colleagues, you're saying that you want to connect and that you want everybody to feel calm, but that's not what you're feeling. And they are always going to mirror back what they experience when they're in your presence. And so the real thing we need to look at here is what kind of support do you actually need for you to feel a sense of safety and for you to feel that sense of calm in a really genuine and authentic way?" Mm. Because if you notice with me here with you, that's beginning to happen. And now when you look at this horse, what do you see? And the horse was totally relaxed and licking and chewing and just wandering around really gently and much, much more engaged and much more quiet. And she was like, "You know, what is that? Some kind of magic pill up your sleeve?" I said, "No, it's not at all." Mm. We're reading each other's feeling states. So when we're scared, we're scary. So it's about slowing down and getting in touch with what you actually need. And we don't just get there by waving a magic wand, you know, and what every person needs is a little bit different and a little bit unique. Mm. But getting curious and having the courage to really, really make that a big priority, because it will transform the way that you show up. Mm. And that transforms our relationships.
And I can't help but see the gift in this, that once you learn to self-locate and shift your own emotional state, that you also in turn develop the ability to read the cue of, I'm going to say the horse, but let's take that to the boardroom. Mm-hmm. And you also then have the emotional intelligence to be able to read the state of the people around you so that you can then shift your own behavior in order to be able to hold space for those people or for the horse in the yard, to come back to the way you're facilitating this process.
That's absolutely right. So my work has evolved pretty substantially. I mean, I don't do a lot of equine training stuff anymore. It's really about helping people restore their relationships with one another and deepening and expanding our capacity for safe, healthy intimacy with each other. And that means, you know, being able to communicate, being able to connect. What you were speaking to about being in a boardroom or being in a meeting with fellow colleagues, they know that psychological safety is one of the key measurements for productivity and creativity. So while we used to say like, oh, you know, this is all these soft skills, we don't have time for this, we need to operate like machines, we don't have time for emotion, we need to just, you know, churn out X number of widgets. Well, that's okay if we're talking about an assembly factory line. But when we're talking about being able to innovate and being able to create environments in a workspace where you have long-standing, healthy, thriving relationships with one another, psychological safety is vital. So if I come into that meeting and I have a lot of unprocessed anxiety, a lot of challenging trauma situations going on in my little inner world, I'm going to bring all that with me everywhere I go. And if I don't take the time to slow down and be really attentive to how I'm actually feeling and what I'm personally needing to show up to be my best self, then it ripples out. Again, with the research and heart math, they know that just from our autonomic nervous system and our pulse rate, we begin to synchronize with one another. Mm. Now, interestingly enough, if you fill a room with people and you have people that come into that room and they're, you know, maybe everybody's got social anxiety or something and everybody's very anxious, and you bring one person into that space who is deeply and genuinely calm, who doesn't feel a sense of distress, without saying a single word, everyone's energy and even pulse rate will start to synchronize with the calmest one in the room. Mm. It goes back to that matriarch. Yeah. It goes back to that matriarch mare example again.
Yeah.
We all know on a deep level that we need what we call parasympathetic nervous function. We need to be able to be in a place of rest and digest and a sense of safety so that we can function at our fullest capacity. So when we cultivate that inside ourselves, just on a personal level, we start shaping environments with everyone that we engage in that begins to foster connection, creativity, innovation, trusting relationships. And that gives back to us tenfold, as we start to jump into a shared endeavor together.
Yeah. And I think it also enables us to drop more fully into the heart and into the feeling state, and then to make these empowered decisions from that place. For me, it feels so much more centered than overthinking something or being, you know, up in that anxiety zone where, you know, you're just trying to survive rather than sitting with what feels right.
Yes. Mm. And we're all living in a time right now where it's an interesting, it's an interesting time to be alive. Yeah. We're facing, you know, we are facing a tremendous amount of uncertainty and a lot of things that are going to trigger us into that survival behavior. And yet, what we need in order to really navigate this time is that genuine sense of safety, belonging, well-being, being able to actually touch into a place of calm and a place of inner peace so that we can have the kind of creativity and innovation we need to create a very different world.
Kawel, what are you actually doing these days? I'm really curious to know. I'm sure that all of my listeners off the back of today's conversation are just going to want to jump on the Kawel train. So obviously not spending as much time in the yard with the horses. What are you doing?
Yeah, so with the coronavirus, I've shifted to doing a lot of coaching and supporting clients over Zoom and doing the virtual, sessions, which I greatly appreciate. And I'm so grateful for that technology. And I never get enough of supporting the journey that people are going on and that self-exploration and personal transformation. It's just so, so beautiful. Mm. So a good portion of my time is spent doing that. And I also am working on some new retreat programs and some new personal development programs. And I'm just kind of listening for that right time to reveal those because those will be retreat experiences in person, taking people to spend more time in nature and really submerging ourselves in a different way of being. And then one of the things that I think is so vital is to recognize that not only do animals not have this environment of constantly trying to evaluate their value, but there is an expression of harmony within an immense level of diversity. And we are really, as human beings, starting to reckon with this realization that we have not been embracing our diversity with one another. We have not been embracing our uniqueness. We have been valuing some things over other things. And it's created a tremendous amount of harm. So for us to start to look at what does the world look like, and what would my world look like if I open myself to more of an experience of diversity versus the judgment of there's a right way and there's a wrong way? And how, in that sense of what seems like chaos, we recognize that there's actually an incredible intelligence and a real sense of order that emerges from all of that. So I've been, listening for that timing when we have more vaccines and people feel a little bit safer to be able to travel and submerge themselves into some of these experiences where nature is the guide and nature is the teacher. And then I continue to write and to find ways to share. To share about the journey and to share about those stories.
I'd love to read the book, I have to say. And equally, we have lots of nature in Australia. So if you ever feel like coming to visit.
It is top of my list. So, it has been on my list for a little while. I have to say that I've had so many back and forth trips to South Africa for a retreat that I do out there that one of these years, I'm just going to put the pause button on that and come to your side of the globe.
We would welcome you with open arms. Kawel, what is your website address? As I said, I know that so many people are going to want to learn more about what you do, and that's probably the best place to get all the updates for your Australian tour.
Yes.
I just thought I'd throw that in there.
It's at koelsimpson.com. So it's Koelle simpson.com. It's my first and last name. And then if you're someone who's wanting to learn about how to facilitate something like Equus coaching, you know, there are a lot of people who want to learn how to do this kind of work for their own clients. Mm. And you can find the information for that under coelinstitute.com. And that's, you'll find more of the information about the actual Equus coach training. But coelsimpson.com is where you can find me and all the different retreats that and personal development programs that are being offered.
Amazing. Coel, my heart is absolutely full. It has been such a joy to have you on the DNA of Purpose podcast.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to spend time with you and also just to have a chance to share about these, you know, just the incredible, incredible journey we're on as human beings. It's a challenging but also a really exciting time to be alive.
It certainly is. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
You're so welcome.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast. If you'd like to follow along, please do at the DNA of Purpose on Instagram. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is the DNA of Purpose with Rebecca Tabb. And if you'd like to keep up to date with all of our team's news and events, you can jump onto my website, which is RebeccaTapp.com. That is RebeccaTapp with two P's.com. Also, if you love what we do, then please do leave us a review. It would be greatly appreciated. Or if you'd like to share your inspiration with our team, we'd love to hear from you. Please do reach out, say hi at your favorite social media hangout.